Seminar Agelessness, Lecture Number 10. My Universe Knows Not of Itself. My universe knows not of itself? What a silly thing to say my universe knows not of itself. My universe should certainly know of itself, but it cannot. For if my universe knows of itself, then it is not the universe. We spoke about that, the isness and the allness sort of thing, you know. If my universe knows of itself, then it is not the universe. Now, many people have a big problem with the universe. They think this is our universe, and then there's universes beyond this. There's universes and universes and universes. Well, what we can do, if we wish, we can say there is one universe. Like there is one mind, there's one intelligence, there is I'm number one, there is just one. And so if we were to say there is one universe, we would get rid of all of this many universes idea. Now, what are the boundaries of the one universe? Well, it has no boundaries, because if it has boundaries, then it's not the universe. The universe is the endlessness of the endlessness that just goes on and on and on. And we, in our relative finite attitude, cannot conceive of endlessness. We cannot conceive of allness. We cannot conceive of isness. We can't, well, isness, we get a little closer to it. But we cannot conceive of these things. And every time we try to put it into our mind, we confuse ourselves. Now, why is it that we say to ourselves, my universe knows not of itself? Okay, we'll take, Gertrude. Gertrude loves to be taken. So we'll take Gertrude. And we will say to Gertrude, Gertrude, you are a symbol for the universe. Okay? Gertrude, what are the rods and cones doing in your right eye? Are the rods and cones in your right eye, there are millions of them, are the rods and cones in your right eye interpreting the light and the darkness? Are they interpreting the color? Are they interpreting what's going on in your universe? And the statement is no. What your rods and cones are doing, are the broadcasting set. They are broadcasting from you your concept of the world, and then as you look out, you see the concept that you have of your world in you reflected outwardly. Now, Gertrude, what is the limit of your rods and cones? There's no limit. They're merely focus gadgets, you know. All right, Gertrude, in the middle of your back, right in the square middle of your back, is a cell. What is that cell doing? And why is it there? And what's its purpose? And is it friendly with the rest of the cells, or is it an unfriendly cell? Is it, you see, you don't know. You don't know. Because the minute you start thinking about your cells, the minute you start thinking about your rods and cones, the minute you start thinking about any individualization of your universal self, then you are not Gertrude. You're not the total Gertrude. The total Gertrude is the total essence of everything that makes you up. Now, look at this. Is Gertrude in her body? Now, she's not. Gertrude is everywhere. Gertrude projects herself on the screen of the infinite cosmos, just having a ball. Gertrude is everywhere. Gertrude is the allness. Gertrude is the isness. She is the absoluteness. Gertrude is the total universe of the universe. And you cannot define any one little part of it. Scientists playing the game of defining the stars and counting the stars. What do scientists say virtually every night after counting stars? There's more of them yet to count. And then what happens? Remember Galileo? Galileo had a very primitive microscope, telescope, didn't he? Very primitive. He had to. That's the way lenses and the stuff was in that time. It was very primitive by today's standard. Why is it primitive by today's standards, Dorothea? What do we have in our telescopes today? Schnell.
Lenses.
I'm sorry?
Lenses.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But something added to the lenses. Huh?
It's computerized.
It's electrical. Oh. It's computerized. Oh. It is electricity is added to it. So now the lenses can see further than the human eye could ever see. Mm-hmm. And the lenses reach out. Now, they're reaching out to space, you might say, that has never been reached out to. But like Lydia's saying too by her comment, today it's a computer that does this sort of thing. Tomorrow it's a computer that does a billion zillion more. Well, it's the capacity of the computer to comprehend, and I don't mean comprehend, but to have on its hard drive, so to speak, you know, 60 gigabytes, 100 gigabytes, 270 on our little gadget, 260, whatever it is, on our backup disk. And Sylvia, Smarty, what does the biggest hard drive in the world, what is its memory capacity? Have you any idea? Now,
well,
go ahead.
Trillion
eyes. Yeah, it is beyond our comprehension. Now, if that is so, when will that trillion, which today is really quite something, when will it be in your laptop, you know? When will it be in your laptop? Because when I started out in computers, at the beginning of computers, we had a little, a big floppy disk like this here. And I could get one chapter on a floppy disk, one chapter of 10 pages. So all of my books are written with 10 pages. And so I got one chapter on each floppy disk. And so I did that with my first books, and it worked out great. And then you also had to have two floppy disk thing, one for your program and one for your memory, because that was where your memory was. And so you would stick your program in with one, and you'd have the memory for the other, and then you'd be working off the two. So now today, your memory can be loaded on your hard disk, which is in your computer, and you can also, at another part of your hard disk, you can use it for your memory to write with. You can use it as your back, you know, your what are we saying? Of your, Yeah, it's not backup, but it's up. It is you have your hard disk, and you can have your program on it, and then you can have your memory, which keeps your letters and keeps all that other stuff, you know, so that you're working right on that same hard disk. That same hard disk right now does all that. Now, not so long ago, the hard disk was in kilobytes. And then it was in megabytes. And now it's in gigabytes. Next it'll be trigabytes. And then zigabytes and pligabytes and whatever else they go on up to. But it's unbelievable that they can do this. It's unbelievable because we have not seen it done now. But if you and I were to shine around here in the year 3000, we would be amazed at what has transpired in technology. We would find people living pretty much like they always lived. We would find things pretty much like they always are. But instead, there would be no illness. And the reason there would be no illness is that there would be some sort of a condition that would purify the circumstances, and there would be no illness. And there would be mental illness. There would be a lot of mental illness. And the mental illness is because people are just boggled by all of these things, and they haven't moved up to it. And they have a cure for that too. They just put a cap on your head, and all that boggles you is made balanced, and now you're in order. You know, no problem anymore. Kind of nice, huh? So you see, we are living in a universe which we have the slightest idea how grand it is, and though we have our electronic, electronic would be the word, but magnetic or telescopes, our electronic telescopes, radio telescopes. That's what it is. Radio telescopes go beyond electronic telescopes, and then there will probably be something coming up that'll even go beyond that. But it goes farther than any electronic thing could ever do, because it is radio waves. And I'm sure that there are other waves that are on the wave scale that are even beyond that, that we haven't really recognized and used yet. But what I'm trying to throw at you is that you are this total universe. You, right now. You are this total universe. You are every thought that exists in the universe. You are every concept that exists. You are the allness of the universe. And because you're the allness, the only time you get into trouble is when you take yourself out of the allness concept and you make yourself into a unique individualization concept. The moment Gertrude has a problem is when she thinks of that pimple on her back and she tries to reach back there to press it and clean it out. You know. And if she didn't think of that, if she just lived in her ideal spirit, mind, and body, there'd be no pimple. There'd be nothing to take her attention. She would not give her attention to any little imperfection or any little thing that wanted to draw her attention. Now, if Gertrude were living as a master, Gertrude would be living with perfect teeth that never needed anything, perfect eyes that never needed anything, perfect nose, perfect complexion, perfect hair, always exactly the way you want it, you know, a perfect body, everything about you is just exactly as you feel the ideal you is, and there would be nothing to change. But you see, this happens when we can get our attention away from the minuscule, the little tiny things that have drawn us there and have limited us. So whenever we think a limited concept, we are taking ourselves away from the universal. Now, you think that it's wonderful that we have 60 gigabytes, I think these have 40 gigabytes on them. We have 60 gigabytes on our computers, and we can have more if we wish, pay a little more, get a bigger gigabyte on them. And our little jump chip, jump what?
Jump drive.
Jump drive. Pew, 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 pew. Our little jump drive has 1 gigabyte on it, but you can buy a jump drive that has 40 gigabytes on it. Did you know that? You can buy a jump drive that has 40, but it's not really a jump drive. It is a tiny little hard drive. The hard drive is no bigger than that. But it is a moving hard drive. The jump drive is no moving parts. The little tiny hard drive, it's an actual moving disk, but you can have 40 gigabytes on it or more. And you can stick that in any place you want. It has a little USB plug on it, just like the jump drive has. But you can pick up 40 gigabytes of stuff. Now, how many people need to pick up 40 gigabytes of stuff? But it's kind of nice, because if you wish, you can have everything from your computer, you know, backed up on this 40 gigabyte jump drive and hard drive. And then wherever you go, you plug it into any computer you're working on, and there you have your computer. You have your hard drive, your disk, your details on it, your perfection on it. And it has nothing to do with what they have, although whatever they have might be an addition. But you have everything that you had at home. You have everything that you had on your own computer. That's kind of neat, isn't it? And they're not too expensive. They're about $200 or $300 for a 40-gigabyte jump drive. And it's really quite spectacular. So, but You see, you put onto that hard drive everything you want from your computer. You put your whole computer on there. You put your software, your hardware, not your hardware, your software, and your programs and everything that you're working on. And so then, as I say, wherever you go, you plug it into any computer you're on, no matter what it is, and it will adjust itself to that and play through that, and it will be your memory drive. Instead, it will be your C drive. You know what a C drive is. It will be your C drive on which all of your things are. Now, you see, you think that you have a computer, and your computer has 40 gigabytes or 60 gigabytes or whatever it has. And then you get yourself a little jump drive, you stick on it. And then the configuration of what your computer does is just acts as a, not an operating system, because the operating system you have on your hard drive, but it acts as a hardware system. That's it. It acts as simple hardware that takes that material that you have and lets you work with it. Now, I'm saying this not without purpose. When you think of that, you can think how you could plug that in. We have the infinite knowledge, wisdom, information of the universe available to us just by sticking it into our USB port and plugging it in and being aware of it. Now we don't have to do that, because we've already got it on our hard drive, already included in our thinking system. You understand? It's already included in our thinking system. We have a hard drive here of billions and zillions and trillions and millions of gigabytes or trigabytes or megabytes or whatever they call them. And it's infinite. But you see, we have the connection, if you would, to our brain of all of this infinite wisdom, of these infinite hard drives throughout the entire universe, of all the information, if we want to think of it in that simple term. And it's available to us. We have that knowledge. Now, Gertrude doesn't want to know how to make the wheel. Gertrude wants to use the wheel. And so Gertrude goes within herself and she types up wheel. But Gertrude isn't a silly lady. She types up automobile wheel, or a roller coaster wheel, or a skateboard wheel for her grandson, or whatever. And she types that on it, and click, there it is. Click, there it is. Out of the infinite number of possibilities, boom, there it is. So then Gertrude says, I really don't care about wheels. All I care about is peace. And so then all of this confusion, all the chaos, all of the undifferentiated matter, all of the undifferentiated thought and beingness in the mind just mellows out. And in her program, what does she hear? She hears the Golden Voyage. And the Golden Voyage says, peace. Remember? Doesn't it always say that? We've had it in our seminars for so many years, and it's just been so wonderful. We haven't used it recently, but it is so wonderful. It's not on the market anymore. It's not available anyplace. So if we have discs with it on, be very careful of those discs, because otherwise it's not available anyplace. And it's nice stuff. So, but what does the Golden Voyage do to us? It clues us in. It programs us to peace, to relaxation, to harmony, to joy. And you see, these are the things out of the universal cosmic consciousness. Now, Ellen was telling Dorothea that there's a simple way to solve the problem Dorothea was having. Dorothea was listening to her concert hall music, which had 114 pieces on it, and they were designed to play all of them. But I didn't do that. I merely went to one piece, clicked on it, and said play, because I wanted to quickly demonstrate it. I didn't go up to play all and click on it, which would have tuned in all of the pieces and played them in rotation and played them continuously. But I clicked on just the Ave Maria because I wanted to have her hear her sound system. And of course, she thought that whenever I do anything, I always take everything. I always click on for play all. And that was not the case. So you see, you and I and Dorothea, what we do is usually click on all, play all, because we want to enjoy all the music. And so we listen to all the music just ecstatically and delightfully, and we are very happy. But then we come to the position, where do we turn it off? Well, I have installed on my computers a little red circle. And the little red circle is, it says, don't think a thing, Herb, just click this little red circle and it will go through the cycle of turning off your computer so you don't have to do it yourself. You don't have to wait for it to go click, 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 and do all these things. You just press this little red button and it does it for you. And it works. And that came from Mr. Modem. And so it's a real handy little thing. But you see, there are so many possibilities in our computer system. There's so many possibilities in our body system. Well, let's take one or two from our body system. We are sitting at the table, and we see a beautiful cake. Beautiful cake. Beautiful frosting on it. Our favorite frosting. I won't name the kind because mine might be different than yours. But it's a beautiful frosting, just your favorite. And so then we see Ingeborg. And Ingeborg takes out a knife. And she takes the knife and she rinses it off with her mouth and cleans it off and prepares to cut the cake. She goes, you know, and so then she cuts the cake. Well, your appetite's lost a little bit there. But she cuts the cake. But Ingeborg cuts the cake in such a way that there are 12 little pieces and one great big piece. Well, she serves everybody the little pieces. Well, naturally, there's only one piece left, and so that's the piece that she gets. So you see, when you cut the cake, you get the opportunity to choose whatever you want to have. Now, this is what many of you have done in life. You have looked out at the world and you say, they got a better helping than I did. They got a better, sure you do. They're a better singer. They're a better dancer. They're a better lover. They're a better musician. You like that lover bit, huh? They're a better musician. They're a better driver. They're a better pianist and what have you. They're better whatever, you know. And why are they better? Why is anyone better in anything than somebody else? The only reason anyone is better in anything than somebody else is because they have given their attention. You know? Now, do you think that the man who came up with the Big Bang Theory was any smarter than any other scientist? No. He was no smarter. He was a knowledgeable man, a knowledgeable scientist in the astroscience studies. But the thing is, how did he come up with the Big Bang Theory? Well, he came up with the Big Bang Theory because one evening he was at home with his kids, and the kids were saying, Daddy, tell us a story. Daddy, tell us a story. Well, what do you want to hear a story about? Well, how was the Earth created? How was the world formed? How did life come into being? How did everything come into a start? Daddy, the Bible doesn't tell that. How does it come about? How did it come? Well, the Bible says God did it. Yeah, but Daddy, you're God. Now, how did it come about? And so Daddy, like Alice in Wonderland, Daddy begins to tell the story. He said, well, there was a little Adam floating around in space, and it was kind of lonely. And this little Adam didn't know what to do. He says, gee, you know, I'd like to have other Adams around here. I'd like to have other beings around here. So the only thing it could do, it could be a hermaphrodite. And you know what a hermaphrodite is? A hermaphrodite is one that has children itself. It doesn't need to have a partner to have children. Of course, like an amoeba too, you know. Okay, so it says, all right, I will have the whole family. And so, boom, it burst. It burst into an infinite number of pieces. And each piece burst. And then it burst again and burst again. And out of it came all of the planets, all of the stars, all of the things that make up the universe, all of the wonderful asteroids and things that are floating around in space. But it didn't stop. It kept bursting and bursting and bursting and bursting because it was bursting in unlimitedness. It was bursting in a space that had no boundary. And it is still bursting, according to the scientists. It is still spreading and spreading and spreading and spreading. Einstein said that there is no boundary to the universe at all. And then a number of scientists said, oh, Einstein, you're wrong. There is a boundary. There is a limit. And Einstein let himself be convinced that perhaps there was a limit. And then later, they proved that Einstein was correct. There is no limit to the boundary of the universe. It is just going, going, going. Okay, now, in this limitless, unlimited, ageless attitude, it's always new, it's always fresh, it's always dynamic. And they said 15 billion years ago was when it first started. Well, that's whatever. It doesn't matter. And so the National Geographic had a great 30-page spread on it showing how all of this change took place. The first day of the Big Bang, the second day of the Big Bang, the third day of the Big Bang, and then on into the 100th year, 1,000th year, millionth year, and things like that, and showing how it is. And it's quite beautifully done. Well, that is pure theory. And he says, the Big Bang Theory. Now, do a lot of people believe it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And why do we believe it? Well, we don't have anything else to believe. We don't have the Bible to say how it was. God did it. And okay, well, how did God do it? Well, he brought the Big Bang Theory. he put an atom out there to be lonely, you know. And then the atom says, hey, I want to have somebody around me. Can you imagine the atom talking to itself saying, I want somebody around me? Well, now, why not? Why not? You see, but this is how these things work. This is how this program goes. And that's why we say, my universe knows not of itself. It takes an observer, as Bill Harris would tell us, it takes an observer to see what's going on and what's happening. Okay, now, who is that observer? Who is that observer that sees the Big Bang Theory going on? The scientist who's telling this story to his children, you know? Interesting. Now, as the scientist goes on telling this story to his children, the word gets out to the scientific community that he's told such a story. And so all the people of the scientific community add dimensions to it. And they add color to it, and they add drama to it, and they add magic to it, and they tell how the black holes of outer space are out there. But do you know something that doesn't get much press? Are the white holes of outer space. There are a lot of white holes in outer space, and they haven't had much press because they're still working with the black holes of outer space. But one day, They've mentioned it. It's a record. And one day, someone's going to take the white holes of outer space and give us a story that'll just crack our sides. Really give us a rib-tickling happy time to think about it. But think about this. Now, the universe cannot know itself. Because if it knows itself, it limits itself. Now, Gertrude is a mother. And she has three children. And she created these children as the ideal of her heart, her mind, her soul, her being. And then she says, okay, go forth and multiply and spread and do things. Well, two of them, one of them did it, and the other two are still thinking about it. So they're going forth. Now, Is she standing over them telling them how they are to do this? No. Has she planted within them the seed of understanding of how it is to have a family and how it is to multiply and grow, how it is to do these things? No, she just planted the seed, but she didn't do anything further. Now, what's going to happen? I mean, Gertrude, she started this thing. She started with Adrian, Martin, and Katerina. And then she has Sabrina, and then she has Jerome. And then she has all these things going on in her world. Now, Gertrude, 2,000 years from now, what's going to be the heritage of your family? What's going to be the multiplication table of your family? I mean, they started off kind of slow, but who knows what they're going to do? I started off slower than you. I just have one child and one grandchild. But hey, that's cool. That's cool. You see, these stories, we can never know the possibilities of it. Now, if Gertrude said, I am curious and I am going to find out. I'm going to find out in 1,000 generations what my family tree has done. And of course, her family tree will be brought up just for her, because she'll bring it up on the computer, and it'll come up on the computer and say, the family tree from the start of Gertrude Suter, regardless of who else is involved. From the start of Gertrude Suter, she's number one. And then this is what has happened. And it'll show branches that stopped and branches that grew and branches that went on from other things. And it'll show children who were abandoned and who were picked up by other families and raised by other families and having all sorts of experiences outside of the family tree, but still inside the family tree because they're part of the family. And she'll have zillions of activities going on. Now, so she's looking at her family tree. Big deal, you know. She's looking at her family tree and she's seeing it. Now, can she comprehend what she's seeing? She can say, oh yes, I understand, this came from here and that came from there. Well, you know the usual family tree program that's on computers. And it's interesting, but of certainly no value whatsoever. Because you see, every single one, every single person, except the first one, on the face of the earth is a bastard, is a person that has not an assured father or mother. Who knows who they were? Can you tell me, since Adam and Eve were the first people on the face of the earth, and Adam and Eve and Cain and Abel, I got to say it in the right order, Adam and Eve and Cain and Abel, well now, where did, who got killed, Cain or Abel? Abel. Who lived? Cain lived. And Cain was sent out away from home, and he found himself a wife. Now, where did he find a wife? Where did she come from? How did she come out of the isness of all? And no one contests that. No one says, hey, if Adam and Eve were the first people on earth and they had two kids and one was killed and they were both boys, you know, hey, this is a cool arrangement. You know, now, where did the rest of the world come from? Where did the rest of the people on earth come from? Well, they're all symbols too. And that's great. But the point is, you see, if we worry about those details, we put the story out. And everybody, not everybody, let's say, many people want the Bible because it's their only semblance of order and balance in life. Because otherwise they'd say, how did we start? Where did we go? How are we going from here? What's going on in the world? How does this happen, you know? How does this happen? How does this go on in our world? And we say, what can that do? How can that be? And, of course, what is going on? What is going on is that we have areas of our creation we know not of. Gertrude doesn't realize that she has, a parallel being. And that parallel being has her name and her genes and her thing. And that parallel being is espousing many, many, many children and many houses and many worlds and many lives. And well, you say, well, that's not the Gertrude. Oh, yes, it is. Gertrude has many aspects of her being that we have no idea about. You see, Sylvia has proven that to us. Sylvia thinks about things, and when she thinks about things, she creates them, and they are. Sylvia thinks about LeBaron, LeDuc, remember? So, or what's your fuzzy buzzy?
Oh, Snuggles.
Snuggles. Sylvia, that's even better. Sylvia thinks of Snuggles. Oh, Snuggles. Oh, yes, yes, yes. I know what you mean, Snuggles. Sylvia thinks of her little Maltese Terrier, Snuggles. And she thinks how wonderful that little mutt was, and how wonderful, but she doesn't think how wonderful the mutt was. She thinks how wonderful the mutt is. She is living on that dimension of time and space with that mutt and just having herself a ball. Now, she's not only doing that. She is thinking of the time that she was in the front yard and her mother came out and told her. She was thinking of the time that she was playing with the other children in the neighborhood and they were doing this. You see, she's recreating all of these things in her life. They never died. They never cease to be. And she is living on all these dimensions of time and space right now and having a great old time. Now, do you think that Gertrude gave birth to many things before she became a woman who could give birth to things? Sure. All through her childhood, she thought thoughts. And her thoughts were things. And her thoughts were the creation of her mind and her world. And she is doing that. And Ellen, my goodness, all of the things that Ellen thought about as a youngster, if it were really to continue on being, would fill the universe. And Dorothea, my goodness, what do you think about Dorothea? Do you think about all of the things that happened in your world? What does Dorothea think about her father? Dorothea thinks, you know, my dad was great. He never was concerned about whether we wore clothes around the house or not. And he always thought that we were the most natural, beautiful people on earth. We were just glorious people, right?
Right.
Right. And so she says, I have always had that feeling of independence and feeling of freedom. And it was one. Now, what is she thinking? She is back there. She is experiencing that. She is living that. She has given birth to that. Now, what she has done is something different. She has taken this Dorothea back in time to that experience and coupled them together and created an entirely new universe, a new stage of time and place which had theoretically never existed before. At least it was never manifest before, but it was always there. And what does Ingeborg do? Ingeborg has all sorts of thoughts of her past, of her previous experiences of her world. And she thinks of the experiences that she had with her husband, the experiences she had with her mother, the experiences she had with her father, the experiences she had during the war. And she couples them together today with who she is today from her attitude and her point of view today. So she looks at it from this point of view, and what does she think? One of the greatest respectful circumstances of Ingeborg's life was her time with the Japanese shipping people, because they left a great experience in Ingeborg's life that she'll never forget. The experience that these Japanese shipping people left in Ingeborg's life was that they believed in her, they trusted in her, they allowed her to run the business for them. They had absolute confidence in her, and she had confidence in herself doing this. Now, you see, that is a wonderful time of her life, and she doesn't want to let that go. But she can live that confidence of her life that she knew then in the now, or she can use it back at another time. Because we are living on an infinite variety of dimensions, infinite number of times and spaces all at once. And you see, this makes us ageless. When she doesn't How old was Ingeborg when she was working for these Japanese shipping magnates? How old was she? Now, don't tell me. How old was she? She was ageless. She was a young, dynamic, vital woman, an ageless woman. How old was she when her father was carrying her across the field, trying to take her away from her mother and take care of her for himself? How old was she? She was ageless. She was in her father's arms, but she was ageless. She was a young lady. She was today what she is. She was a baby. She was anything. She was ageless. You understand that? And this agelessness is what I would like each of us to get into our consciousness. It's such a beautiful thing. When Ellen was at church, in the Catholic Church, and she was seeing everybody having communion and so forth, and she was too young for it, so she would line up the little children after church and say, okay, come on, everybody, we're going to have communion. And she'd go around, shove wafers in their mouth, and pour bottles of wine down their throats, and she would give them communion. Now, how old was she when she did that? She was ageless. She was a dynamic young girl, and yet she was a mature woman, and yet she was a baby. And when the priest came in and said, what are you doing here? And she said, he says, okay, now go play. He didn't say, you silly old lady, you silly young child, you silly person. He just says, okay, go play. And you see, if he had said, that's silly, it doesn't work that way, you don't know what you're doing, you're terrible, she would have hated the priest. And so the priest doesn't allow himself to be hated. So he just says, go play, kids, have fun. Because he knows he'll get his message across sooner or later. Now, what about the rest of you? What sort of backgrounds do you have? What sort of dream zones have you come from? And what sort of things have you allowed your thinking to take you back into? We're in the retina of Gertrude's eyes, and we're seeing through her eyes. We're seeing an infinite universe that she is casting out on there. I'm in the process of buying a projector, and it's a projector that will take anything from my computer and shine it up on the wall. See, we take that stuff away from that wall there and shine it right on that wall, and we could have bleep playing right on that wall. We could have bleep playing on a bigger wall even than that. And, you know, that's a big, big stuff, like, you know, widescreen. And then, because I have a tablet, I can write on my tablet, and I can say, now, here is how the earth, or the world is, the universe. And I draw a circle. And I say, now, I make a broken line for the circle, because really, there is no limitation to the outer extremities of the universe. You know, it's open. And then here is one little speck in the universe. And that little speck is everything that exists. Everything. All the stars, the moons, the suns, the planets, everything that exists anywhere. It's just one little speck in the allness. by the time the allness is covered, which you'll never be, it's infinite. You follow me? And when we start thinking that way, we start thinking in the most fascinating thing. Well, here, I've got this projector here, and I can take it and put it over there, and put it over there, and make a bigger ball, and a bigger screen, and a bigger area, and a bigger area, and I can shine it in the sky. And when we were in Sydney, Australia, they had an evening show there at the bay, and at the show, they would play glorious music, and then they would have what was it? They had figures there. They had scenes.
Water.
I'm talking about the picture. What was the picture that we saw? Well, some glorious pictures, really some beautiful pictures. And what was the pictures made of? There was a projector with a very powerful bulb shining out over the water, these pictures. But you could not see the pictures unless they had something else. They had
a steam machine down below, five of them. And these steam machines were shooting steam up into the sky. And the projectors were shining their pictures on the steam. So here you have this phantasmorium, that's a good word if I get it right, but you have this phantasm shining on this mist in the sky. And it's really so glorious. And then the music playing and all the other things. Pure illusion, pure, but very real. Everybody waited for the whole show. The show was maybe half hour long or better. And people sat through the whole thing, and they didn't think their butt was getting tired at all. They were sitting on cement, they were sitting on whatever there was to sit on, you know, and watching that beautiful scene. It was glorious. It was magnificent. I'm sure other parts of the world have things like that too. But it was so beautiful. And Ellen and I were just so... Did we go back a second time? I think we did, yeah. It was so beautiful that we really just delighted in seeing it. And this is what we can do with our slide projector. We can create these illusions. We can take off of our disc whatever movie we have, whatever, we can take our audio video camera and take pictures of me speaking to people and then projecting that up on this great screen and having it be, and wouldn't that be exciting? Wouldn't that be interesting? And all of the possibilities that we can do, but you see, that's what, and it just takes it from a little laptop like this. And I think that's probably what they had, was a laptop on which they played these things. But they didn't have, I'm sure, a tablet, because the tablet hadn't come along at that time. And on the tablet, you just merely draw it, and you create it, and if you had been here when Heinz was here, Heinz went crazy. I let him play with my tablet. And Heinz is very creative, and very alert, and very intelligent, and so he took the tablet, and he took the little tip of the thing, and he made a paintbrush out of it. And he painted swirls of color, and then he added other swirls of color, and then he blended the color together. And then he pressed little buttons here and there, and the color did all sorts of magical things, and he saved them. But I don't know where he saved it, because I can't find it on the computer. But he saved it someplace, probably took it with him. And it's... He could paint. He could do things that Michelangelo would have just dearly loved to have been able to do. But he did it just with a flash and the slur and the flurry of the wonderment of doing it. Now, you see, we have no idea of the allness that we are, of the universe that we are, of the greatness that we are. And so, if I were to take this tablet and paint on it, while it's being projected up on this big screen of whatever, just imagine how glorious that would be. Remember, we were trying to look over Heinz's shoulder while he was showing us on the machine. And it was beautiful, but it's a little hard because it's not that big a screen. But these are things that you can do. These are magical things that we can do and stuff that are really exciting. And it is a wonderful world that we live in. It's a wonderful world. And we say here, my universe knows not of itself. My universe is so infinitely vast, it is limitless. It is vast beyond imagination. To know itself, my universe would have to be within a boundary, and this it does not know, nor could it ever know, and be yet the universe. My universe is the allness. I live consciously in a state of eternal bliss. Isn't that charming? To consciously live in a state of eternal bliss because I'm unlimited. Because I can take, say, a couple kilobytes and put it on a jump drive. I take a couple kilobytes, put it on a jump drive. And then I can take a couple megabytes and put it on a jump drive. Then I can take a couple gigabytes and put it on a jump drive. And then I can take a little tiny hard drive itself, no bigger than a 50-cent piece or a silver dollar type of thing, you know, and have it have 40, 60, 80 gigabytes. How unbelievable and how magnificent. And the possibilities are limitless. And we say here, I live consciously in a state of eternal bliss because I just let go and let my imagination take me to all of the wonderment that the universe has. And in this, I am eternally vital, eternally ageless, eternally young. It's an exciting adventure, and it's something that each one of us are doing right now. It's just that we haven't been aware of it yet. And we can be aware of it because it is really something very, very exciting. We're on this side over here. Okay. Then we will be ready this afternoon after lunch. My universe is an expression of the confusion of chaos. Won't that be an exciting adventure for us? So, have a lovely lunch and know that I love you. I love you. I love you. I love you.